Next is a darshan with His Divine Grace Satsrupa Das Goswami Gurupad in Vancouver on February the 4th, 1985.
So we have these some incidents here. After the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, after the disappearance of Lord Krishna, their devotees were bereft who knew them, and they used to talk about them. Just now, recently, the 11th canto, part 5, was published, and it has an astonishing chapter in there about the actual disappearance of Lord Krishna. And one statement was made by, I think the acharyas are quoted, that Lord Krishna left because if he wanted, one reason he left after being here for a considerable while, he didn't want to attach undue importance to this material world. If he stayed much longer, the reasoning is people would have taken it and said, well, Krishna, he stayed a long time in this material world. So he just wanted to show its insignificance. Therefore, he did his duties here and then he left. And the matter is intricately discussed about the so-called shooting in the foot by a hunter. And there was one thing I was really impressed me to read was that that's a puzzling episode that Krishna appeared to be wounded like an ordinary man, so it gives weight to that, to doubt and how is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead for those who superficially hear this incident. So as compared to Lord Rama's disappearance, which left no doubt that in the full view of everyone, he ascended back into the spiritual world in a very glorious way. So the acharyas say that the reason is that knowledge of Krishna is meant to be only for pure devotees. And it's almost like it's a deliberate puzzlement to separate these sincere devotees who won't be puzzled by such things from those who, if they're going to be, if they're not going to believe the Krishna Supreme Personality of Godhead, then let it come out. Because worship of Krishna has to be earned by those who are 100% devotees, who realize all his activities are transcendental. So that was interesting that there are certain activities of the Lord even which are meant to be hard to understand, so that those who fall away, who don't have the sincerity to be able to just accept it, even though it's not exactly understandable. But the actual meaning of that disappearance was not as it seemed, that Krishna had to leave under any pressure. But there was great sadness for devotees who were very close to him, like Uddhava and Arjuna. So we remember reading in the earlier chapters of that volume, of that canto, that Uddhava was sent, he was left behind so that he could go to the gathering of sages at Bhadrak Ashram in the Himalayas and tell them of Krishna's last instructions and last pastime. He was left behind because everyone went back to Godhead, practically. That was the reason of the dissolution of the killing off of the Yadu Vamsa. Those who were demigods with Krishna, they went back to their planets. Those who were eternal associates, they went back. Everyone went back. It's like, if Krishna wasn't going to be here, then there's no point in us being here. We're just meant to be with him in his eternal pastimes. But if there's a feeling like that, just like when the wife, when the husband dies, the wife enters the fire. So actually part of his pastimes, as described there, was that there was a mass sati rite of all his wives. But the acharya said that this was just a dramatic display foot of their attitude, but actually they didn't in their spiritual bodies undergo any such thing. Nevertheless, they certainly went back when Krishna went back. So someone like Uddhava, he had to bear the separation of Krishna for the purpose of helping others to remember Krishna. Similarly, we have in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, some of the devotees who were with Lord Chaitanya, they remained for a while and talked about him. And one of them was Raghunath Das Goswami. He was an important link which brings us the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're informed that Chaitanya Charitamrita was composed of things that were heard spoken by Raghunath Das Goswami, as well as the diaries written by Swarup Damodar and the earlier pastimes, Murari Gupta. So every day at Radhakund, Raghunath Das Goswami, he would speak for a few hours about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So we try to remember so many things about Prabhupada, not relying on one person's memory, but taking different accounts. I was recently talking with some devotees who were with Prabhupada in the very beginning days in New York City. And for some of us, that was a very special time, and we regard it as a very special time for the movement. One of the devotees was asking about the place, 26 Second Avenue, the little storefront, and why hadn't we purchased it. There was some talk some years ago that we would purchase it, and it never happened. So I was encouraging him that you should take this up. Well, he already thought, I should do this, I should take it up. I said, yeah, you should take it up. And I was thinking, recently I was seeing there's a lot of advertising and campaigning in the United States now to collect money, for many things, but I've been noticing this thing for the preservation of the Statue of Liberty. There are different ads taken up. And it's kind of it's an ongoing campaign to collect enough money so that they can fix it up. It's 100 years old. Millions of dollars are needed to preserve it. So it strikes such a note in many persons, this statue. They want to keep it nicely. So we were talking about this 26th Second Avenue and how there are places in the material world, as Brahmananda was saying this, like in London there's the room where Karl Marx lived and it shows where he walked to the library and wrote all his books. I know in New England they still have the little room where Thoreau lived when he wrote Walden Pond. There's so many places like that. So you should make a campaign to try to collect the money and buy this place. So that's the external monuments. But the reason for the affection for those memories is because it shows Srila Prabhupada in a very in the setting in which he began this movement, where he had nothing. And that's a fact when we think of some of the details, how he had no money for rent, no money for clothes, and so he just accepted what anyone gave him. And living in a foreign country, but very happy and confident that he was with Krishna. I just heard on a tape today, Prabhupada was talking with one man in London, And after about a half hour or so, Prabhupada was very enlivened, speaking very basically about the soul and trying to instruct the man. So the man said, apparently just to excuse himself because he didn't want to stay anymore, he said, well, he said, I want to thank you. He said, I've certainly taken up, I don't want to take up too much of your time, I've certainly taken up your time. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, that my time is for this. He said, I am traveling all over the world just for this purpose. He said, but Prabhupada could understand the man was just being polite. And then Prabhupada said, of course, if you don't want to hear, that's a different thing. But he said, but my time is for this. So that was especially noticeable in the early days. I think Mukunda Goswami has written that in a memoir, how he was impressed that Prabhupada had all time for him. I think he says at their first meeting that in the end he wanted to leave. But Prabhupada was still prepared to talk with him to deliver him Krishna consciousness. You could say on one hand it was so because Prabhupada had nothing else to do. In a sense, he had no projects to attend to, and he had no followers. Either he made some followers by talking with them, or he could occupy himself and write his books, but then he'd just be living on borrowed time, that he'd have to go back to India soon. But whatever the circumstances, he was certainly very available, and that was important to the people then. That he gave us his Krishna conscious friendship, and that we were attracted to that. Now, another reason for being attracted to these early pastimes is that in one sense, Prabhupada set all the standards for ISKCON then. Even though they were set in certain humble circumstances, at least in one sense, he certainly set standards. He did things his way, according to time and place, but it was certainly his way of serving prasadam, of holding kirtan, of dancing, of managing, with him doing it all himself. So that's very important and interesting also. And to have received that means that one should be responsible to try to remember it and keep it up and remind others of what it was. Example of prasadam, for example, with Prabhupada himself cooking, was that prasadam was very simple. It was very important also, part of the preaching. Just like now, those who are preaching to the non-devotees regularly know that prasadam is very important. So, but anyway, his even once they became devotees, prasadam was an institution, and it was very simple. That is, he would serve either himself cooking and then teaching others, starting with Bhakti Pad. He served us a dal, rice, chapatis, and maybe one vegetable during the week. But although it was plain and simple, there was plenty of it. We're always encouraged to take more. And everything was very nicely made. But we were excited by it because it was new to us. But you could definitely say it was simple. There wasn't much deep fried, or sweets. Just more helpings of the same simple prasanna. And that was the week, but then on Sunday was a very wonderful feast. So that contrast, I see in some ways we have drifted from some of the things that Prabhupada set up. In some places, the devotees all during the week, they have a lot of the things that in those days we only had on Sunday. It was actually in keeping with the simple spiritual life, the kind of monastery atmosphere that Prabhupada did create, even in New York City, that we were all controlling our tongues and eating very simply, although keeping fit, strong, healthy. So that kind of austerity of taking the simple prasadam, it was changed into feasting on Sunday. So part of the feasting excitement was that during the week we rather strictly controlled our tongues in the eating. And then everyone would take part in the preparing of the prasadam, and on Saturday, and inviting as many guests as possible. So it was really like a fantastic feast. So that is the standard, which doesn't have to be just a memory, that the Sunday feast should not deteriorate, but should be a wonderful thing with all the best preparations of sweets and spices and everything. And I remember that standard. And another standard is in the kirtans. That you can hear on the tapes of Prabhupada. So when I speak of this, if we contrast it to the present, it may seem like we want to make a crusade to do away with the kirtans as they've evolved. I've thought about that, and I've concluded that that would be impossible, and it's not even advisable. The devotees are very ecstatic and happy in the kirtans as they are now. But I can just explain the original kirtan and the evolution, which also took place during Prabhupada's time. So the kirtan, as you can hear it, is that he would sing one tune through the whole kirtan, and he would start slowly and gradually build, not very, very fast, but to a certain speed. And he could go on like that for an hour or more. And the emphasis was definitely on hearing the holy name with great attention. I remember Prabhupada once remarked about this ashram in New York, Mayavadi Ashram, and they did some chanting of Hare Krishna. Prabhupada mentioned it. He said, but they do not chant like we do, heart and soul. So that was actually the way we chanted, heart and soul, listening like anything to his leading, and then ourselves immersing ourselves in the sound of the chanting, drums, kartels, and different musical instruments that were there were never more than the singing and the hearing. And as I say, one steady melody. And the dancing, I guess you could say, it was compared to now, is very sedate, but still, it was Prabhupada personally introduced how to dance, and what Bhaktipada at that time called the Swami step, with your arms held up and dancing back and forth. That also was subordinate to hearing the singing, which could swell up very wonderfully, on and on and on, waves of chorus with Prabhupada singing. And you can hear this on the tapes. You just heard a few segments in the play that was presented the other day of his kirtan. So I would say, as far as evolution, the elements of, I guess the elements are Western rock and roll and Bengali kirtans that have come in. So Prabhupada saw them come in, and there are some devotees who say that on different occasions he said he didn't like it, but he basically did accept these things. There's an article in the present Brijabasi Spirit, now they call it Plain Living High Thinking magazine from New Vrindavan. It's an article by a devotee about dancing, and he describes how personally he was present and was dancing ecstatically before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was pleased. But at least these elements were not introduced by Prabhupada. When the devotees first went to India, they learned how to stop and start kirtans and that kind of thing. But when he came from India, from Bengal, he did it a different way from his countrymen and other kirtan leaders there. And he certainly didn't introduce the rock. And he also, as far as all these tapes and my own memory, He hardly ever sang anything except Mangala Charana prayers for kirtan. Bhajans he would sing differently with his harmonium or other things. But when there was a kirtan, like he would some start Vande Hum Sri Guru Sri Jatapa Kamalam, or all the names of the acharyas, then Panchatattva mantra, then prayers to Nama Om Vishnu Padaya to Bhakti Sunga Saraswati, and then Panchatattva, and then Hare Krishna. No Nithai Gaur, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, etc., 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 etc. Again, I'm not saying these things like some kind of snob, but I don't think it should be like, well, forget it, that's the past, we don't have anything to do with it. We chant Nithai Gaur, Hari Bol, and that's the way it always was, and that's the way it always will be. No, it's nice to remember. And sometimes we can, just as we have different kinds and flavors of kirtans, sometimes we can have those kirtans like Prabhupada had. I recently printed something about this, and I went to Boston after, and I don't know whether it was because of that or something, but some of the kirtans were more like that. And then others were more like they're done generally in ISKCON. So these are sort of in the mood of remembering those times, talking about why don't we preserve the 26th Second Avenue quarters. We can also try in some way to remember those ways that Prabhupada held kirtan, and that and the way that he, the other example I gave was prasadam. His lectures, you can also hear, there's quite a few lectures recorded from 1966. And sometimes I've heard some imaginary thing. People say, well, when Prabhupada first came to America, he didn't first talk about Krishna. He talked first a lot about the absolute truth. But that isn't what you hear in those lectures. They're just like any other lectures in terms of their content, talking about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and any stories about Krishna Leela. He started from the beginning, Sanskrit aplenty in his lectures. I do notice there's certainly a difference. The difference is there's a lot of noise in the back on those tapes. And also, I think I wrote in one place, there's like an urgency in Prabhupada's voice. His voice was cracking with urgency. And it was really intent. Excited to get his message across. That is their kind of intensity. His intensity, not that he lost intensity in Los Angeles or London in 1975, but it's definitely different. You could say historically, later he was like a king. He was a royal guru amidst a big family in growing opulence. And then he was historically, you know, someone who was had just a little time left on his visa and no foothold even, and he was trying to make a devotee or two to make it worthwhile staying. And it hadn't been proven as a fact yet whether it could be done. History had up to then said it couldn't be done. His godbrother said it couldn't be done. He hadn't proven that it could be done. But he was right in the midst of proving that it could be done. So that's a very exciting thing to think about and to hear when you hear his early lectures, that he was breaking the ground. And what ground it was, it's the most important ground that was ever broken in the West, the most important new thing ever introduced, which is still, as we talk, we say, gee, it's amazing, nobody understood who Krishna was, and there was no devotee, and now he did it. But it's practically still the same. Although we can appreciate that the movement has evolved, it's still like an unheard of thing in the West, unappreciated thing. So we're still in the mood of Prabhupada, intensity, urgency, trying to get a toehold, trying to establish it. That's why we are all close to Prabhupada, because we are close in years of his recent visit here. Prabhupada, like he talks about Lord Chaitanya's appearance here as being recent. I think in one place he says, within the memory of almost everyone. We think 500 years ago, that's like, it's hard to imagine. But it's not. Some people, they live over 100 years. Some yogis live for many, for several hundred years. So Lord Chaitanya is considered not long ago, or even Lord Krishna is considered not long ago. So Prabhupada, he was very recent. He was like a very recently here. But so quickly he left. So quickly he left also. I was saying the point of the standard of his activities. Oh, and so his lecture is the urgency of the message. That's a characteristic of those lectures. And the noise, it's the noise and the distraction. It just impresses us how he was so determined that he wasn't distracted by the noise. Later you'll hear Prabhupada lecturing. Sometimes there's the slightest noise. They'll say, what is that? You know, stop that. Stop that baby crying. That's the ideal way to speak. Somebody once challenged him. Said, you're supposed to be a guru, but I noticed that when the baby was crying, you were disturbed. How can you be a spiritual master? Prabhupada said, you were disturbed by the baby. He said, but you couldn't hear. So therefore, I take pains to stop this noise because you're disturbed. You can't hear. So the really necessary situation is that it be very quiet, no distractions, and that everyone pay attention. Don't divert your attention. Prabhupada would even notice if somebody was wriggling their toe or picking on their nail or something, he'd say, don't divert your attention. But when he couldn't control it at 26 Second Avenue, then you don't hear so much shut the door or try to control that noise, stop those people in the street, because there's no question of stop. Then you tolerate and you preach. So there you hear him preaching in less than ideal circumstances and just going right on without any. Now, as I'm reminiscing about these things, another Prabhupada being a very person, being a person, as much as the old disciples like to talk about it, apparently Prabhupada, he always used to like to talk about it too. So that's very sweet that such a transcendental personality as Prabhupada liked to remember New York City as the place where he came with nothing and began this movement. We were in Vrindavan when Prabhupada passed away, some of the devotees felt, like I said about Lord Krishna, that by leaving, Prabhupada was showing the insignificance of this world. How could he leave? How can he leave us? But this is not everything. We felt, well, actually, well, we got some realization of that and thought, well, Prabhupada, he knows much greater devotees than ourselves, and Krishna wants him to be with some really significant devotees. So a personality like that, who's intimate with Krishna and who goes to Krishna, yet that he's very fond of reminiscing about his activities of preaching in this world, is very nice because it gives us a personal feeling. And it also points out the importance of preaching activities, because that is what he liked to remember, was the different features of the preaching activity. For myself, I as much as I liked those early days, I would love it when in later years, if I were with Prabhupada and he was dealing with so many big things, so much management, if he would stop to remember those things. It was always very wonderful. We would try to cue him. He would try to remember the landlord's name, and we would just be in ecstasy, saying, although talking quietly about it, he would suddenly start to remember Mr. Chudy, the landlord. And he could roam over so many memories of those days and tell different things. And one would not be interested in them unless he was very interested in Prabhupada. Questions about these things? Yes. Ghee, sure. We didn't use oil. He showed us how to make ghee overnight. Skim it. Yeah. Prabhupada would personally cook and show us how to cook in the ghee. He had a kitchenette, not a kitchen, and a small gas stove. So we would be in there Saturday night cooking. And after a while, he didn't have to do it all himself, but he would be in his room writing or talking. But then he would come in and see how it was going, and invariably it wasn't going as well as he could make it go. So he would then take over and show you how to do it expertly. And then he would go back. One of the devotees in those days, Rupanuga, was saying that he was talking about, nowadays we're talking a lot about the guru and how to institute the worship of the guru. And he was talking about the way that Prabhupada introduced it. That how is it that we came to worship Prabhupada and bow down to him? He had no previous experience of it, and built him a Vyasa-san of sorts. So one reason was that he told us about it and in his lectures, just talking about the guru, the spiritual master. As I say, he introduced everything in the beginning. So he would talk about the guru in very high level, representative of Krishna. The whole concept was introduced. You have to take shelter from a guru. From the first days to the last days, he was always talking about that. Just today I heard a tape. A mathematician in London says to Prabhupada, some philosophical question. Well, Prabhupada says, anything you do is all right if you do it for Krishna. And the man says, well, how do you know if you're doing something for Krishna? You need training, Prabhupada said. So therefore there's a guru. Just like you're a mathematician, if someone has to learn math, you have to have training. Guru. So he's always teaching about the guru. And he never said, I'm the guru, but we can understand that he's the guru. So one way we came to understand that the guru was very important, or that Prabhupada was important, and that he was the guru, was by hearing from him. So that made us inclined to take it very seriously. And the other thing, another thing was his personal example. So we could see that he was a saintly person, which he had never had any idea of, a real saintly person, although he had seen priests and rabbis. He never saw a saintly person, a pure devotee. So we saw how he's always absorbed in Krishna thought and completely surrendered to Krishna. So that gave us, dull as we were, a realization that he's very special. You have to treat him special. He's not an ordinary person. So he told us that, and he showed it. And it was in his books. So we gradually, slowly, began to do things, like starting with the offering of obeisances, which he told us about. There was no institution that had already set it up, but these were the ways that it was introduced by Prabhupada himself. And in later years, he would speak that this was right. Remember, you can remember phrases like, he said, these boys are so nice that every time they see me, even if they see me 200 times a day, they'll always bow down. that's another example of something introduced by Prabhupada, and we can study it. Certainly the way he did things then can't be taken that it can't be touched or changed, because it was a simple time and things evolved. But it's definitely worth studying and preserving things, as I say, that not that his assistant did or his institution did, but when he had his own hand in it, he did it this way. That's worth careful attention and following. So he introduced a different thing last week. Have some other questions? Yes. More conservative people? Well, it was hard for them to understand the movement. It was seen as sort of an aspect of the hippie movement, so they didn't much partake in it. To come there, they would have to come and sit down on the floor in a small place in a bad neighborhood. So it was very hard for them to find out the secret. And we're making it a lot easier now with our gorgeous temples. So this would be an example of how 26th Second Avenue was not to be taken as the full-blown ideal of Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada had his vision of temples to come, like in India and here, where it's very comfortable. A person can come, he can sit in a chair, and he can eat very sumptuous food. He doesn't have to get so involved as he would have in those days in something that would be strange and unlike his normal activities. And there weren't many people like that who would come by. Prabhupada took whoever came. Yes. Well, that may be a statement made in frustration, but I hope it's not true. We want to reach the classes, and as well as the masses. There's college preaching, there's Indian preaching, so there's preaching to the masses, and there's preaching to the classes. It's one of our programs, and people are training for it, and that is going on in a limited way, but it has to increase. At least we should all take part in whatever preaching is available. Yamala Arjuna was writing me how happy he was feeling personally to be preaching in the yoga center. And he just wished that more devotees would come down and share the nectar. So you have a nice opportunity there, those who are in Vancouver, to go down and preach one-to-one. So any opportunity we have to speak to the non-devotee about Krishna, we should emulate Prabhupada, how he was always, as he said, I am meant for this, my life is for this, to speak to people. That's such an impressive feature of Prabhupada's activities, his continued enthusiasm for speaking the introductory Krishna consciousness, which he did over and over. Millions of times he would explain the same thing. He was just enthusiastic and compassionate to convey that. His anger, for example, how people misuse the Bhagavad Gita and interpret it for their own benefit, how India has been misled by the different swamis and yogis. He never tired of exposing the rascals. I told you that the thing he said to me once. He said, I don't care if I go back to God, he said, I just want to expose these rascals. His enthusiasm for that was just never ending. And his boldness also. time and again. He would be with some, I was just hearing this, with some Indian ambassador and some Indian official government, and they would drop the revered names of Vivekananda, Ramakrishna, Gandhi, and Prabhupada would just, in one sense, you know, socially, just do the wrong thing. If he wants to make points with this person, you know, as soon as they say some praise to Mahatma Gandhi, he did not know anything. This is very impressive that he was a preacher, so he was always enthusiastic to speak introductory Krishna consciousness because people are all at the introductory level. And he's ready to remove their doubts. We'll take a little break.
Vajahure mana Srinanda nandana Abhaya charanara Vrindavan.